That's the spirit.
Professor Peter Linen.
Hello, Peter.
Hello there. How are you going?
Good, Peter. Hey, just off air, right before we came into the segment, I pondered to John what the most on-trend religion is. Like, what is the one going?
What's the biggest and what's the fastest growing?
Who's winning in religion?
Our fastest growing is Islam, no question about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Biggest Christianity still. Mm. But Islam is catching up, and the estimates said by 2050... Islam will be the world's largest religion. But I mean, these are all based upon projections of goodness knows what. Mm. So, but that's certainly what the big surveys would suggest.
Oh, cool. Okay.
It is interesting because, I mean, we would imagine in New Zealand that probably non-religion was growing incredibly fast.
That's what I thought. But does that count in the whole...
And that is growing, but you've got to bear in mind that Western countries amount to relatively little of the total world's population.
Sure.
So I think non-religion would come out as third, but okay. It's the massive growth of religiosity in Africa and Asia, and especially what's happened has been that a lot of traditional religions have given place to the large monotheist religions, actually.
How good is the word religiosity, by the way?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Well, we're trying to describe something that afterwards quite varied with different people. So, for example, with Hinduism, you can get an enormous amount of what you might call sort of almost magic in the way of popular practices. And yet there's a very high level of philosophy in Hinduism as well.
What do you mean by magic?
The sacred cow and stuff?
I mean that... practices at a popular level that play around with
I'll put
ways
a spell on you
to,
kind of thing?
Yeah, that's right, and ways to appease the gods and sacrifices and
old
rituals
school.
And and so that's the difference between the two, but they're all part of the one mess, because most religions have a popular side and a more philosophical side, and of course it's those of us in the academy have a tendency to only be interested in the philosophical side. But it's the popular side that attracts people mostly.
Mm. Okay. A bit more magic, I reckon. I'd be into a certain religion.
Well, of course, the other aspect is what you might call rituals.
There you go.
And rituals seem to have an enormous appeal in many parts of the world.
A lot of symbolism.
And in some ways, I've sometimes wondered whether what we're seeing today with the rise of, you know, more Maori rituals in our society isn't a new kind of religiosity it's actually a very old kind, but being recreated in the absence of a shared religiosity.
Right. Gives us a bit more to focus on as a group.
Well, we're not asked to believe anything, but we're invited to practice something in common with others.
I guess also it's not going to put people off who, I mean, when you say we're not asked to believe anything, these things that, like you say, are kind of real things that are already established. So it's not like it's too much of a faith fall, is it? It's actually...
Yeah. Well, see, Christianity certainly has a strong emphasis on faith and what you believe. But quite a lot of other religions, that's not a particularly important aspect. As long as you practice the religion, what you believe is neither here nor there.
It's your own. Now, so, Peter, I guess this kind of feeds into the topic that you've given us this afternoon, that a recent survey in India has shown that most Indians oppose interfaith marriage. So you've got to choose a partner who also shares your religion with you.
Yes, well, what struck me is that actually 50 years ago that would have been true in New Zealand as well. Mm. So that 50 years ago it was very, very difficult for a Catholic to marry a Protestant. Mm. I remember that one of my relations married a Catholic, and from our Protestant background, and the big issue, everybody was saying, is he going to turn?
which one's going to turn to which one's thing?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, but Catholicism put the price higher because you weren't allowed to have a full nuptial mass, that was the grand mass before the high altar, if you were not a Catholic, if both parties were not a Catholic. And therefore there was enormous pressure to sign up, and also to promise to bring up the children as Catholics.
Mm.
And this was, of course, bitterly resented by most other people. And in recent years, Catholics have dropped that. And in our society, I guess it would hardly be a significant question, except possibly among those religions that feature in India. Because, you know, it's an interesting question whether the symbols that were shown in that survey, the Pew survey, showed that, you know, Hindus and Muslims, that was a very big barrier to cross, and some of the other traditions as well. And I suspect that would still be the case with some ethnicities. They would feel pretty strongly about those issues. And I have heard and read extraordinary stories about religious violence often comes down to the person, you know, the young person who steps over the line and forms a relationship with a person not of that religion. And the vengeance of the family comes down heavily on the betraying person. So it's a cause of significant violence.
There's a sentence within this BBC article that we're talking about today where right-wing Hindu groups have dreamt up something called a love jihad, where they accusing Muslim men of luring Hindu women with the sole purpose of converting them to Islam.
And this shows the level of paranoia and fear that's, you know, incredibly high in the issue. It is probably true, however, that Islam feels more strongly about the issue than does Hinduism. That for Muslims, if a person, there are laws within Islam which says you're committing a treachery if you abandon the true faith. And because Islam, being monotheistic like Christianity, has a strong emphasis on the true faith, then the level of treachery seems to be higher than in Hinduism. But as for converting, I think you've got to ask some real questions about that. That seems to me quite exaggerated.
How does this all line up with the tradition of arranged marriages? Because obviously, if a marriage is being arranged by the parents, then they're all in the same faith at that point. So this is applying for people outside of that, perhaps?
Yes, indeed.
Right. So what are the stats on that? How many are and aren't in arranged marriages in India these days?
In India, I would have thought at least 80% of people would be in arranged marriages.
Oh, okay. So,
And I mean, there are plenty of stories of people going back to India to meet their bride and bring the bride back. And in fact, there's special arrangements in the New Zealand law to cater for arranged marriages. Because they don't fit the normal basis of a relationship having to be proved to allow immigration. But the other interesting side to this story is that in big urban centres, of course, love at first sight, the Western principles of,
so it must
romantic
be hard.
Marriage
must,
are very popular.
It must be so hard to try and be married outside of that realm. If 80% of people are doing it one way, then the whole society will kind of revolve around that, right?
Well, of course, there have been little convenient tools that are used whereby the young persons can indicate they've got a preference, but then it has to be checked off against with the women who arrange their marriages and the appropriate issues of, pretty critical in Hindu society, of your status has to be worked out to see whether this is an appropriate a choice. See, that even in Hinduism, you can't marry freely.
Right.
It's critical that you marry within the caste because it's just unthinkable that people can move across those, and especially you go to the forbidden castes. Which are completely unacceptable.
Does the state have any say in policy around these sorts of things?
They're saying they've introduced a controversial law that criminalises interfaith love.
The Indian state, historically, there have been parts of the Indian state that have had non-conversion laws. And it's illegal. The illegality lies in the person who entices them, as they say, into a conversion.
What happens to the people that do it? And is your marriage not
Yes, your marriage
noticed?
Is null and void. Okay. Your marriage will be null and void. However,
so are people lying about their faith on marriage things now? Is that's basically where this is headed,
well,
right?
Well, it's not a universal law. It's only in certain states,
I see.
As I understand it, that it works this way. And the law is often not very well enforced.
Hmm.
And so this is where the tension comes. You know, how far will they go? How far will they enforce this? But the suspicion of conversion is incredibly high. And the most common forms of conversion are exactly when there's a marriage, a link-up, and people want to get married, then they're likely to ignore the rules about religion.
It'd be interesting to see how the people have workarounds, you know?
Well, I mean, I think it's a real question of the extent to which India can accommodate, you know, the new world, the old world. Can the two be put together or not? And India is one of those test cases because in one sense it's incredibly go-ahead, and another sense, it's extraordinarily traditional.
Is there any sense at all in banning interfaith relationships and love?
Oh, I think it's an appalling decision. Obviously, couples have to work out for themselves how they practice their religion or if they practice their religion. And years ago, I did a study using some data from a Dunedin sample where I found it was very common, actually, for Catholics to marry Protestants. But they generally married in the registry office and did not practice either religion. And so it's probably a major factor in neutralizing some of the sharp religious differences that once were part of our society.
Does the Indian government have a preference for the religion? Is that kind of what this is about? Or is it like...
Oh, well, the Indian government is notoriously Hindu-oriented and, in fact, will do anything to protect Hinduism and the BJP party, and in fact,
so that's what this is.
They will raise the fear of Muslim men as a high concern.
Yeah.
Hype it up.
Fuzzy, far out. Okay.
Yeah. Well, just watch where you go. That's all I can say.
Right on. Thanks, mate. We'll catch up with you next Monday, Peter Lynham.
Excellent.
Thank you.